Good morning, and welcome to the October District of Columbia Board of Pharmacy open session. My name is James Appleby. I'm the Vice Chair of the Board of Pharmacy. I'll be overseeing the meeting today because Dr. McCants, our Board Chair, is away on other business. So welcome to members of the public. Before we get underway, I'd like to ask our board members and staff to introduce themselves, and then we'll also be asking members of the public to introduce yourselves so we're aware of who's with us today before we proceed with our agenda. So,
Ben? Hi, Benjamin Miles, board member.
Good morning, Alan Friedman, board member.
Ashley Bowe, board member.
Good morning, Shauna White, executive director and board members. Please feel free to use our microphone.
Corinne Barron, health licensing specialist for the D.C. Board of Pharmacy.
Good morning, Carla Williams, board counsel.
Great, and members of the public who are with us?
Is one right here?
Yeah, we'll pass that around. So that way we can hear you as well. Thank you.
That'll be good.
Right.
Don Zalard, D.C. Public.
Denise Feluca, Walgreens.
Tiffany Taylor, Walgreens.
Good morning. Charlene Fairfax, D.C. Health Department, Department of Healthcare Finance.
Good morning, Ryan Mouton, GWMFA.
Good morning, Sanford Kaiser Permanente.
Wonderful, welcome. Our first item of business for the open session agenda has to do with approval of open session meeting minutes from September and from August of this year. We will take them as two separate items. So starting first with item A on the agenda, which is the September 5th, 2019 open session minutes, which are available for board members to review. And I should note that we do have a quorum this morning to conduct business. I'll ask board members to make sure they familiarize themselves with the September 5th minutes and see if there's a motion.
I'll make a motion for the September open session minutes. I move that we approve the minutes.
Okay. Motion to approve the September minutes by Dr. Miles.
I'll second.
It's been a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, is there general consensus in favor of the motion?
Yes.
It's all nodding up and down. Therefore, I'll ask that all those in favor vote aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. And now on to the August 1st, 2019 open session meeting minutes. Please familiarize yourself with those and ask for a motion from the board.
Maybe.
Mr. Chairman, just one note of correction before there's a motion to approve so that it can be approved as amended. I believe in the August minutes it indicated that I made a motion to approve the collaborative practice materials and I was absent from that meeting, so we could amend that.
Thank you. You're very effective at the board, but if you weren't here,
not that effective.
Probably didn't make the motion, so thank you, Alan. Any other comments or adjustments that we'd consider before a motion? Okay. Is there a motion then?
I will move that we approve the August open session minutes as amended.
Dr. Miles, is there a second?
I'll second.
Second. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, is there general consensus in favor of the motion? It's all nodding in the yes direction. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
One.
One abstention. Alan abstains because he was absent. And the motion carries. All right, we're on to second item on our agenda, which is the consent agenda. There are no items to be considered there, so we'll go on to the executive director report.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Pharmacist Month. I want to take this time to acknowledge all the pharmacists in the room and what we do for our patients in the community, get everyone excited. Look forward to every October. So just wanted to acknowledge that I will be providing some statistics and some other information. Here you go. So currently right now we have 2,096 pharmacists licensed in the District of Columbia. 662 of those pharmacists have vaccination and immunization authority. We have 524 pharmacy interns, 902 pharmacy technicians, 79 pharmacy technician trainees. We have 11 pharmacy technician training programs and 862 pharmaceutical detailers. I want to give a few updates for the prescription drug monitoring program. So I would like to thank pharmacists for encouraging colleagues to register for the program. We do have a mandatory registration mandate in effect. So our next step is to encourage our pharmacists that are practicing to actually use the system when appropriate in practice. So if you know a colleague that is registered that does, you know, work in dispensing or in a clinical capacity, if they aren't using the program, please encourage them to use the program as they see fit. It definitely has a lot of valuable information. The opioid strategic plan is definitely on the Live Long DC website, so if you want to know what the District of Columbia is doing with opioids and our community partners, our plan, the website has been updated. A lot of information on there, so please feel free to check out the website if you want to know how District of Columbia agencies are collaborating to tackle the opioid crisis in the District of Columbia. I wanted to give a few NABP updates. So I think it was 2 weeks ago I attended the district meeting, District 1 and 2 meeting in Vermont. It's the same meeting that we hosted last year, so I wanted to provide some information on some things that were discussed at the meeting. I know last year we had 4 CEs, but this year they decided on 3 CE topics. One of the topics was from Idaho's executive director about how they have transitioned their standards of care. The other CE topic was about evolving roles of pharmacists and changing the healthcare system. I found this CE to be very valuable. Basically, the presenter, Dr. Byrne, she gave a lot of information about value-based care models. So I know typically we see a lot of different things on fee-for-service. So if you're not familiar with value-based care models and closing the loop with patients and practicing pharmacy, please familiarize yourself. I'm sure we will be seeing a lot of things being pushed out, and Charlene nods her head about value-based care models. So we definitely look forward to providing more information. And then the last CE was about compounding. So I know USP has had a lot of updates over the last few weeks about compounding, which chapters they are delaying, and how those things may affect what you do day-to-day. So please be familiar with those things. And I think they are keeping their website updated with information. So I would like to ask, you know, if you have any questions, please, you know, direct them to USP. The next topic I wanted to talk about is the audit update. So the last open session, the Board of Pharmacy voted to initiate the next round of healthcare practitioner audits for detailers, pharmacists, and pharmacy technicians. So
We are receiving that information now, so I will be sending an email out to see when the board collectively wants to come in and review, or if several pharmacists want to come in and review the audit materials at the same time. So I wanted to get enough responses in from practitioners so we can kind of do it in one setting to streamline the process. So I did want to provide an update on that as well. I also wanted to provide an update on DEA Take Back Day, which is October 26th. So if you are not seeing information in your practice or in your day-to-day about the Take Back Day, please go to DEA's website. They are doing a big take back. This is their take back that they do twice a year. So there is some information about that on their website. I also wanted to talk briefly about the Department of Health's Narcan pilot that we are participating in. So I wanted to thank pharmacies. I know Denise is here. Walgreens is participating. So currently right now, you can get Narcan at pharmacies throughout the District of Columbia. There's 12 pharmacies that we have, and the Narcan does not require a prescription, and there is no cost. So a patient can go to the pharmacy, they can pick up Narcan, and they just need to leave a little bit of information about their name, and the pharmacist will ask them about allergies, and just, you know, get the Narcan. So we wanted to remove the barrier of a patient's copays being a factor for patients that receive Narcan. So I'll just read the list of the pharmacies here. There's one pharmacy in each ward. We're working with the HOSTA team. They already provide Narcan to a few of the community partners, which is HIPS and Family Medical. And the Department of Health also has a Narcan training where they provide Narcan to our community partners as well. And that information is on the Live Long DC website about the training dates as well. And then the next newsletter article for the Board of Pharmacy, we have information on that as well. So I'll read the list. Morgan Pharmacy in Northwest, Grubbs Pharmacy on the East Capitol Street location, Grubbs Pharmacy the Northwest location, Grubbs Pharmacy the Southeast location, Calorama Pharmacy, Good Care Pharmacy, Excel Pharmacy, CVS 22, which is on Poirier Street Northeast, CVS 1340, which is on Bladensburg Northeast, CVS 1360, which is on Alabama Avenue, CVS 1364, which is on Georgia Avenue, CVS 1354, which is on Connecticut Avenue, CVS 2834, which is on 14th Street, Safeway 1445, which is on Alabama Avenue in Southeast, Walgreens 15360, which is the 801 7th Street location in Chinatown, Walgreens 16049, which is at Howard University Hospital, and then the Giant, which is on Alabama Avenue Southeast. So definitely if you know someone who is in need of Narcan patient-wise, please let them know that we do have pharmacies that are providing this information, and we hope to get this up on the website soon. Right now it's on the website, but it's more so with interactive map. I think it'll be easier if there's a list, because the map is a little tricky the way they GIS the map. So those are some cool things that we have going here on the in the Department of Health. So definitely if you know a patient who's in need of Narcan, or any individual who's in need of Narcan, please direct them to our website, to one of the pharmacies. If anybody has any questions.
This is Shirley. How long will this pilot program be running?
Right, that's a good question. So the sustainability of the pilot program, we will evaluate it after a year. There should be enough supply to get us through a year, but after a year we'll, you know, evaluate the effectiveness, evaluate supply and things like that.
Okay.
Any additional questions for Dr. White?
Thank you very much, and thank you in particular for the insight into what's happening with the NABP district. That sounds very compelling. All right, then moving on to the Assistant General Counsel report on, we're going to hear about the Clinical Lab Practitioner Advisory Committee update. Is that right, Carmen?
Yes, sir.
I think it was at the June meeting, we came before you, the Clinical Laboratory Practitioner Advisory Committee, and requested permission from the board to revisit the law itself. That law passed in 2014, and the advisory committee members who actually work and practice in that field noticed a number of things in the law that just may have been correct in 2014, but were no longer consistent with current practice. So what is before you now is, and it begins on page 18 of the electronic materials, and we have in blue red line, I think it's the way it's showing up, the suggestions that they are recommending to be made, and that we submit legislation to make these amendments to the law itself so that we can then move forward with the regulations which will allow us to finally begin licensing and regulating these professions in the District of Columbia. So one is to add in, of the preamble on the first page of the materials is the most notable significant thing that will be done is to add in qualifications to serve as a clinical laboratory director. It just really wasn't clear in the 2014 bill, and some of the information that was there, or legislation rather, seemed conflicting and certainly not consistent with current practices. So you'll see in the preamble that's one of the things this seeks to do. If we move into the second page in the definitions, the practices side of technology, there was some language they thought should be added to make it more accurate with what cytotechnologists actually do. So we need to add in or cells aspirated from a lesion. Likewise, in 6A, the practice by a histologic technician, indicating that it's preparation of human and animal tissue samples for microscopic examination related to diagnosis and treatment of human disease. And they wanted to be clear that although it may be an animal tissue, all their practice is related to humans and not actually animals. Moving further down, they've included a definition for medical laboratory. So a laboratory performing CLIA 88 non-wave tests, including moderate and high complexity and point-of-care testing that is non-wave. A lot of this was stuff that I didn't quite understand, but it's something that in the profession I think is pretty clear to people who work in labs, and the terminology they felt needed to be more accurate than what we had previously. And then we're also making a change to practice by medical laboratory technicians to make it clear that it's a clinical laboratory director, not necessarily just a physician, because some clinical lab directors might be PhD level and not have medical degrees. Also, the definition of medical laboratory technology, just adding in analyzing the cellular as well as content of fluids. And then there was a number of places in the law where it said that the board would actually administer the licensure examination, and we just don't do that. I don't know too many boards that actually do that. So they wanted to just make sure we were saying that through rulemaking, we would set forth the requirements for the examination, but that it would not be incumbent upon the Board of Pharmacy to actually administer that exam. So that's in a number of places. And because I think their involvement and really their expertise may be needed a little bit more than what the law anticipated, the law kind of just set it up that they would come up with some guidelines for licensure, and then it kind of seemed like they disappeared. So we wanted to make it clear that they would be around for the proposed regulation as well as be available for you to consult with if in the future there are any licensure matters, if a complaint or something comes before this board dealing with someone in that profession. Their level of expertise and knowledge of this industry, I think, is something that this board would want access to. And the way this was written, it just really wasn't clear that that's what was anticipated by the person who drafted this bill. So we're just adding that in to make sure that the authority of the advisory committee could extend to being available for you to consult with if you needed their insight in the future. And I'm going to skip through some of this. It's just talking about the exam, which I already mentioned. And then when they get into the requirements for the individuals, cleaning up some of those
we're just technicalities, making sure it's clear with the type of training and education, adding in terms that we're missing as needed. And one of the more significant changes, it's page 5 of the bill, page 22 of your electronic materials. It's dealing with exemption for licensure for select clinical laboratory practitioners. This is the only one that may possibly have some sort of adverse opposition from other professions, because the way it was written wasn't clear. But what we think was intended when it said that an exemption from the requirement to have to obtain one of these types of licenses, the clinical laboratory licenses, would be someone who is licensed or registered in D.C. under any other act and who engages in a practice for which he or she is licensed or registered. We assumed that meant, like, if you were a nurse or a doctor or maybe a respiratory care therapist, you could work in a lab under your respiratory therapy license, medical license, nursing license, and not have to have one of these types of licenses. We assume that's what was meant, but they had strong objections to that because although there are some levels of testing, the wave test that they can routinely do, when you get to the more technical tests, it defeated the purpose of this legislation, in their opinion, to allow people who haven't been properly trained to do those tests. And the whole point is to make sure the tests are accurate so that the patients can get the treatment they need because the laboratory tests can be relied upon. So we are proposing to pull that language out, and then we have some language elsewhere which makes it clear that they can do the wave tests, but the more complicated tests, you would need to meet the requirements and be registered and licensed appropriately to do those tests in D.C. So just giving that kind of heads up that that's something that could possibly, if this gets to council, have some testimony in opposition of it, but we crossed that bridge and we got to it. And again, making it clear that who can serve as a clinical laboratory director, which would include physicians, dentists, and doctoral level scientists. I think that's the highlights of the changes they are proposing. So this is for you, for your vote to approve to move this legislation forward if you are in agreement with it.
Thank you, Council. Is there any discussion among board members regarding the proposed legislation?
So, Carla, thank you for walking us through that. That was really helpful. So just so I understand the process, this is legislation that essentially is being updated, and then with the board's approval, would it be then sent back to D.C. Council? Does the council actually have to approve it? Where does it go, and then how does that play out relative to regulations?
The only thing, the advisor, if the board votes to move this, it goes through our normal legislation process of the senior deputy director, director of Department of Health, mayor's office, attorney general's office, and then it would eventually get to council, and then council would have to move forward to enact the legislation, which also goes through the congressional review at U.S. Congress.
Okay.
Congressional review.
Okay. And so, essentially then, until that process completes, there's formally no oversight that the board has, is that correct?
Correct. The advisory committee was supposed to help us put the regulations in place, but in working on that, they found that the law itself was just fundamentally flawed in a lot of areas. One of the biggest problems, which kind of keeps us, to me, from recommending to move forward while we wait on the legislation change, and I am, I think, proposing to do this as emergency legislation as well as permanent. The way this is written, only a physician or a dentist can be the clinical lab director. And it's my understanding from the advisory committee that most clinical labs are ran by PhD level scientists. And so that would just cause a huge problem in the district. If we are able to get this moved forward as emergency legislation, then we could move faster on getting everything else done and in place. But so that is the process, which you're saying.
Thank you.
All right. Any additional discussion? Is there any
interest in a motion from the board?
So, Mr. Chairman, I will move, and let me just get to the formal name of this. Carla, please help me if I don't word this correctly, but I will move that the board approve amendments to the District of Columbia Health Occupations Revision Act of 1985 relative to, do we have a name for this section?
Clinical Laboratory Practitioners Amendment Act of 2014.
Thank you.
The motion's been made. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
All right. Friedman has moved and Ben Miles has seconded. Any additional discussion? Is there general consensus in favor of the motion?
Yes.
All are indicating yes. Therefore, we'll call the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Council. We'll move on to a couple of subcommittee reports. It looks like Mr. Friedman has a report on the Defending Access to Women's Health Care Services Amendment Act of 2017.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, I would like to give an update report about a couple of things. But before I get into one, I'll ask Dr. White if she would provide an update to the board and the public on access around hormonal contraception.
All right, I just want to make sure we don't have both of them on at the same time to get this squeaking down. Yeah. Thank you. So right now that those regulations, I should be able to provide a better update at the next open session. So I will give you an update. The Board of Medicine did approve their materials, the regulation, everything that the Board of Pharmacy approved at the August meeting. So we should be able to give a better update to where that information is at in the Department of Health at the next open session meeting. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. White. A couple of other things. So at the last Legislative Regulatory Committee meeting, we did go through the collaborative practice regulations, and we were prepared to come to the board meeting with a recommendation for a slight modification to the regs as they currently stand. I don't see them in the agenda, so I wasn't sure if we could move this forward because our intent was to do it in public session.
Unfortunately, that didn't make the agenda, so we'll have to move that into the December agenda. I apologize about that.
I think you have explained the fact of it.
Yeah, so if we can move forward, then I'll ask Dr. Miles to walk us through the recommended change and why we're going to be suggesting that the board approve that. For everybody. Yeah.
Okay. So in the current regulations for collaborative practice, there is an educational and experience requirement. The regulations state that a pharmacist who engages in a collaborative practice agreement must have a PharmD with 3 years of experience or a bachelor's in pharmacy with 5 years experience and either a residency or a board certification, or they can complete a certificate program approved by the board. And the legislative and regulatory subcommittee proposes that we change that requirement to an or, so that any so that somebody can have the PharmD 3 years of experience, bachelor or bachelor's with 5 years of experience, or have the residency and or board certification. And our reasoning behind that is that many people who complete residencies practice or learn how to do many of these collaborative practice activities. In the hospital, for example, we do vancomycin dosing, TPN dosing, things like that. And the way that the regulation is written right now, somebody who graduates a residency who has spent a year doing those things is currently not allowed to engage in a collaborative practice agreement. We also think that it limits the number of people in the community setting who may be able to engage in a collaborative practice agreement. So what this proposed change would do would allow people who have not completed a residency but have had experience working to engage in a collaborative practice agreement. So this change that we propose would apply to both the hospital setting and the community setting.
Thank you, Dr. Miles. So, Mr. Chairman, at the appropriate time, we'd want to make a motion for the board to accept that modification. And my understanding then is it would go to the Board of Medicine for their review and approval as well, and subsequently would be published for comment in the DC Register.
Right, and Council, then we can proceed forward the motion. Your good. Right, then the board will entertain a motion.
So I move that in the matter of the educational requirements and the collaborative practice agreement regulations that we change the and to an or.
Thank you, Dr. Miles. Is there a second for the motion?
I'll second.
All right, Mr. Friedman seconded. Is there any additional discussion?
I just have a question. Now you'll do that. Yes.
Thank you.
Is it on right now?
Yes.
So my question would be, is it possible then that a person could get a degree, BS degree, have no experience, and do collaborative practice?
No. So, first of all, there are not BS degrees in pharmacy anymore. I guess if somebody got a degree in another country and moved here, then they may have the equivalent of a BS degree. But it would still require a minimum of 3 years of experience with a PharmD or 5 years of experience with a bachelor's degree before they could engage in collaborative practice. Or they could graduate from pharmacy school, immediately do a residency, and then be eligible to do it.
Thank you. Any additional discussion? Yes.
I'm just reading that specific line in the regulation. Where is the and in there?
The and comes after the, it says, board certification or completion of a residency or a certificate program approved by the board and the experience section. I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry to identify the specific site. But.
And then my second question related to that is, it also says in there another credentialing body approved by the board. What would be the mechanism for, I guess, inquiring what other credentialing body would be acceptable to the board?
Right, so you would just have to submit that request in writing. I think over the last few months we've worked out with the Board of Medicine that the Board of Pharmacy would approve those requests. So if you have, I guess, a request to or something to be credentialed or approved, you would just submit that request in writing.
Okay, would that be directed
So just thinking about, Mr. Chairman, the capture for the minutes, Dr. White, would it be okay when, to kind of just flesh out the motion for the minutes, that we note the appropriate place that Anne's going to, so it's very clear?
I'm
going to
find it and write it up.
Perfect. That way we have the documentation.
Thank you.
All right. If there's no further discussion, is there general consensus in favor of the motion? Everyone's indicating yes. All right. Then we'll call the question. All those in favor vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Abstentions, and the motion carries unanimously. Thank you. And I know it continues to be a long process, and I just want to thank the subcommittee for their persistence over time.
Speaking on behalf of the subcommittee, you're welcome. Second thing related to collaborative practice, Mr. Chairman. So I was looking through the August public session minutes, and I was not able to attend that meeting. And I just wanted to get some clarity around something I read. Apparently there was a discussion the board had. There is a subcommittee that is focused specifically on collaborative practice jointly with the Board of Medicine. Board of Medicine. And there seemed to be a recommendation coming from the Board of Medicine that there be certain, I guess, disease states where they agree that there's no requirement for the boards to approve a collaborative practice arrangement. And then there's reference to the fact that there are other disease states that they want to consider whether they should be approved or not. I don't really quite understand the context of that discussion, because if I remember correctly, the way the regulations were written and approved, and there was a lot of discussion around this, there is no requirement for either board to approve collaborative practice arrangements as long as they're, quote, standard of care. And standard of care is defined in the regulation. So while I don't think it's a problem that the board has decided there are certain collaborative practice arrangements they don't want to approve because they're not requiring that there be approval, if the intent is to further that conversation by saying, but we're going to look at other disease states or drugs or drug categories and require that there be approval, that would require a regulatory change and agreement from both boards. So I guess I would ask Carla, you know, maybe to share her perspective around the Board of Medicine's ability to even insert their opinion relative to approvals or not, and how that aligns with the regulations as approved.
So I think I said exactly what you said when this came up last month, and that it just needed to be communicated back to the Board of Medicine to remind them that that is how the regulations were drafted, in large part at their request. So I think what has happened is, you know, we spent many, many years trying to move this forward, and I think the composition of that board has changed. And the folks that were on the board at that time did not want to have to review these. So that's why it was written that way, and now it sounds like you may have some people on the board who would like to review them. But as you stated, then that would mean changing the regulations and the process. So as long as it's not something considered, but there's not a standard of care protocol in place, then it's not supposed to have to be reviewed first. So if they are saying that these are items that we feel don't have a generally accepted standard of care, then that's one thing. But if they're just saying, well, we just want to decide if we do, feel you should be doing this, then that's a different thing. So I think there's probably a conversation that needs to happen first between Shauna and Frank as the EDs, and then clarifying with the Board of Medicine what their intent is. And what they are stating is that they feel that these do not have a generally accepted standard of care, or they just disagree with them being done by a pharmacist, because that's two totally different things. And once we get that cleared up, then we'll see where we are. But I think what's happened is you just have had quite a bit of change in the composition of that board.
Thank you, Carla. Is that
that is fine, and I guess we'll just see where they take it. So thank you, Carla. Mr. Chairman, that is our committee report.
Is there there's nothing regarding Women's Health Care Services Amendment Act?
No, so Dr. White did go over that.
That's all. That's everything.
Yeah, yeah. So I did have one other thing. I'm sorry. So one of the other topics that the committee talked about was a desire to start looking at the regulations relative to pharmacies, because that's the board has oversight versus Pharmacy Control Division for pharmacists, and perhaps thinking about whether they should be updated. It's been probably many years since some of those regs have been looked at, and to go through a very methodical review process and propose, where appropriate, updates for the public's consideration. And I think there was talk at the last open session about perhaps having an offsite, and if we do that, perhaps that would be a good time to talk about the composition of the committees. I know, looking back at the minutes, there was some talk about committees and participation, but maybe we could visit that again and then together talk about what that process would look like. But just wanted to mention that to the full board. And I don't know, Carla, I think you had mentioned maybe that we might need to make a motion for the board's approval to start doing the regulatory review. Is that true? We could certainly make that motion now, and then we can just wait until we have an offsite to figure out the best process.
Yeah, I think because it's been open and brought forward, I think now would be a good time to do that. So.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion that the board approve the Legislative and Regulatory Committee start reviewing and potentially making recommendations for updating the regulations as appropriate to Board of Pharmacy oversight.
And which regulations in particular? Just to make sure we're clear.
So I know there are specific chapters. Should we list that in the... That's why I said Board of Pharmacy oversight, because I don't know offhand what those chapters are. But
So you have the pharmacist chapter, detailers, and technicians that are all in the Board of Pharmacy.
I'm sorry, Paul, it's detailers, technicians,
and pharmacists.
And pharmacists.
And then to a lesser degree, collaborative practice here with Board of Medicine.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And is your intent with the all those?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Great. Is there a second for the motion? Any discussion on the motion? All right. Seeing none, is there general consensus in favor of the motion? Yes, therefore I call the question. All those in favor, vote aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Abstentions, the motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
That is our committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. All right, I don't believe we've got a communications subcommittee report today. I'll just note, remind everyone that included in your agenda are some informational items of things happening around the United States provided by the NABB. So a number of interesting items there. There are two matters for board consideration before we'll be asking the public if they have any comments that they would like to bring forward during the open session. Those two items, one has to do with a new legislation, Access to Biosimilars Amendment Act of 2019, and then a follow-on to some of our initial discussion around license examination testing accommodation policies. So we'll start with the Access to Biosimilars Amendment Act of 2019. I believe in our materials, it's something that's already gone through the first round of council review is there, and Carla, can you provide some guidance? Are they asking us for input, or are we stepping forward to offer input? I'm sorry. Dr. White, can you tell us what how this got here and what is really being asked of the board?
Sure. Well, this was sent over by one of our board members for awareness, Mr. Appleby. This proposed legislation was introduced by the Medical Society of the District of Columbia, and it was introduced through Council Member Shea's office. So I presented this proposed legislation to the board to get any feedback, just for the board to weigh in. Basically, the legislation, it wants to amend the Prescription Drug Price Information Act, and it introduced some information about biosimilars. So I wanted to get the board's weigh in to see how they felt about the proposed legislation.
And to be clear, I did not come upon this in my travels. It was forwarded to me by, I think, an individual who from time to time attends as a member of the public, just to alert me that this had happened or was happening. So no one has asked us for any input. I don't know whether or not, don't know how much value it is to us spending very much time on this. It looks like it's chugging along, but I was particularly keen if we are going to discuss it, to find out how people feel about the notification requirements of substitution of interchangeable biological products. That seems perhaps a challenge. I don't know how many pharmacists were involved in the preparation of this document, but my guess is not too many. So there may be a lack of appreciation for what that really takes. So I don't know if people had any particular comments about that portion of this proposed legislation.
Mr. Chairman, just two comments. Well, three. Actually, I've seen this legislation in other states as well. So there are many states that have similar language, including the notification requirements, particularly around interoperable systems. So that's pretty standard. I guess there's just two questions I have for the board's consideration if, in fact, we're asked for input. And the first is, it's line, so it would be page 35 in your electronic copy, lines 41 down, where they define interchangeable biological product. So A is licensed and determined by the FDA to meet the standards of interchangeability. And then B is determined to be therapeutically equivalent as stated in the latest edition of the FDA's Orange Book. So, and I can't remember. What is the Purple Book? Isn't the Purple Book related to biologicals and hence biosimilars? I'm just curious why the reference to the Orange Book versus the Purple Book.
I noticed that as well.
So, I mean, just thinking about earlier, talking about legislation that may not be written right and the downstream impact of that, this would be important if it's not right that the Board of Pharmacy kind of correct that. And it may be appropriate as written, so I don't want to misstate that, but it may just be worth looking at that technicality. Maybe the way it's defining interchangeability, that it would be the Orange Book because that is about therapeutic equivalence, but relative to biologics and hence biosimilars, I think we should just look at maybe where the Purple Book fits in or doesn't. Okay, and then the second thing is relative to your question, Mr. Appleby. I too have a concern about the notification requirement because while I understand from the physician's point of view perhaps being or wanting to be notified, if the idea behind interchangeabilities of biosimilars is no different than the interchangeability between brand generic, right? Conceptually, it's the same. Why would we need to notify the physician? Because we don't currently for brand generic. And then secondly, while the interoperability piece works fine if you have electronic communication and or documentation between pharmacy systems and medical records, where you don't, and there are many paths out there that don't, pharmacies and physicians, that could be a problem. And so you would still have to notify, but you'd have to go about a manual process. And let's say pharmacies that are linked in electronically with certain providers, they wouldn't need to, but how would they remember that it's coming from a provider where they would need to? And so there may be a gap there. I don't know that we could actually move the needle because, again, I've seen this in many states. And if the idea is you need to notify the physician, they've given several avenues to do that. So from the author's perspective, it's, you know, you just have to make it happen, and we've given you a lot of opportunities to do that. But just practically speaking, it will be interesting to see, as consumers or pharmacists out in the community think about this, would they be able to comply? I don't know that the board would take a stand on that or not, but I just wanted to raise that in answer to your question.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. Any additional comments or observations about what's here? And any thoughts about any proactive steps we might take? Do I understand, as I look at this, Carla, that it has been enacted already? It's all, or it's just been introduced? Or what's it? It's been introduced.
Okay.
Is this one of those things where we should go through some appropriate channel to get a couple of these issues surfaced with the right person? What are options? Carl?
And is it going to be a hearing, do you think?
Probably. It looks like it was introduced on September 17th, so it's still very, very, very new. Most likely there will be a hearing. And what I would recommend is, if you feel strongly one way or the other, is you get that information to Dr. White sooner rather than later. If you will recall from previous bills that have moved from council, we sometimes get maybe a day or two to give some input, and it's very difficult at that point to get all of your input, and then sometimes when we do get your input, we've already shipped sale and we haven't been able to get that information to council. So this is one of the few times that we're kind of ahead of the curve, so we know it's out there. If you're fine with it, then there's nothing needed. And if we do get asked to provide insight, feedback from the board, we'll just say that you didn't have any. But if there's something other than maybe the purple book that you would like us to address, just let Dr. White know. And then if we are given an opportunity to provide your thoughts on it, we can very quickly turn that information around.
Thank you, Carlos. So, I think at minimum, we probably want to research the technicality around the orange book versus purple book. I think we have a responsibility to do that. With regard to the patient notification piece, I don't know if it's the board's, you know, if that's something we would or should weigh in. Perhaps we leave it up to pharmacists who may be impacted, or pharmacy organizations, physicians, to consider how they feel about complying with that piece. I just put that out there for the board's consideration.
So we usually don't know how fast these bills move. So I would ask if any comments or suggestions, if you would give them back to me, I guess, no later than next Monday, so that way we'll have them.
And it sounds like, I don't know if I understand from your comments, that this is very similar language to what's in, you know, I think most of the states, maybe all states, have already done something around this sort of thing. I wonder if, at a minimum, though, it wouldn't be fair and appropriate for us to at least communicate through whatever channels this issue around, are we sure that this reference to the orange book is most appropriate here? That's sort of a technical fix that we can bring our expertise to. The other matters, I don't know that we're in a position to, because they are workable in theory, etc. I don't think we're in a position really to criticize if a pharmacy association wants to weigh in that there's too much of a burden on pharmacists, etc. Okay, but that technical item seems appropriate. So I guess I would ask, is this the sort of thing that through whatever our health committee liaison, we sort of get in touch with them? Does the board have to write a letter? Shauna, is there an intern that can do some research around orange book, purple book, whatever? What's the mechanism, at least on that one narrow item, to sort of look into it and then, if appropriate, make any communication?
Thank you. So, actually, funny you say that. I have an intern starting beginning of next week, so definitely I will have them definitely looking at us to do some research to make sure the orange book, the purple book, and we're clear on that therapeutic equivalence evaluation terminology. Did you have a question? Yes or no?
When the bill was forwarded. When the bill was forwarded to the board, did they imply it would be the board's responsibility to enforce the 5-day notification? In other states, it's been medical boards I've seen that have been enforcing the notification.
So, yeah, we're not clear about that either as far as the enforcement piece. So that's, you know, maybe something we could get some clarity about as well.
Or stakeholders could provide that feedback to them.
Yeah. Thank you. So the process will work here. We would just work with our legislative and regulatory affairs department here in the Department of Health and just let them know that, you know, we do want to provide some comments and have some suggestions for the language, and they would, you know, work out those logistics. And if there was a hearing, they would notify us at the appropriate time. So I do like the suggestion as far as if the one of the associations, particularly of the DC Pharmacists Association, did want to make comments around the notification, I think their point will be taken well. But those go to the council, not us.
Right.
And we, this isn't Department of Health legislation. We did not introduce this legislation. This was introduced by the Medical Society of the District of Columbia through Council Member Chen.
Dr. White, are you okay with the boards of pharmacy and medicine maintaining a link on their websites to the current list of biological products determined by FDA to be interchangeable with a specific biological product? Because that is a requirement here as well.
Right. So we currently don't maintain a list now when we substitute out medication. So I don't think we should start maintaining lists because most pharmacies, have references that they can use internally. I know that was the intent of the
legislation.
A requirement, but yeah, I think that's a bit much considering most of us, when we've practiced pharmacy, we do have references that are readily available.
So then that would be another comment, right, that we, or that would be a comment that the board would want to weigh in on, right, because it's here. So if the bill passes as is, we would be required to do that.
Right.
And to be clear, the health staff would be required to make that action happen. So,
well, it says the boards of pharmacy and medicine would have to keep this link on the website.
On their respective websites.
Probably
link it over to the purple, orange, beige, whichever book we choose. Yeah.
So,
all right, so if I understand that correctly, it sounds like the action step is you're going to ask an intern to look into this issue, find out if it is an issue. If it turns out the right citation is the orange book, we're done. If it turns out it ought to be something else, you can, through your appropriate channels, you know, be a hero by giving them a heads up that, look, this really ought to be something else if they want to have it be accurate. Is that right? No motion required. No more.
And so you're not... So about the website posting and maintaining as that changes, don't do anything.
I mean, I think I take it related to FDA because I understand.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for that discussion and those observations regarding this new bill. All right. Our last item before we ask the public for any comments has to do with an issue that came up, I think, over the past couple of months with a request around some accommodation regarding testing. And one of the recommendations from the board was that we reach out to a nearby jurisdiction and find out how they manage this. And in your meeting materials, you'll see some input we received from the Virginia Board of Pharmacy regarding their regulation about testing accommodations. And that is provided there. And I guess the question to the board is there any act we would like to take based upon this as it relates to establishing something for DC. Carla, any perspective on this and whether or not it merits us taking formal action or whether we can leave well enough alone?
Dr. White, please respond to the agenda.
Right. I'm sorry. I think this did. I think this did come up about testing accommodation. So we have received several requests consistently, I guess, probably over the last 12 months, as far as testing accommodations for individuals that want to obtain licensure in the District of Columbia. So it was thought to look at Virginia's regulations about their testing accommodations. And I brought this before the board to discuss in open session if they would like to consider a similar policy or possibly update the regulations. I am not sure exactly how the board wants to address this, as far as we have a policy or regulations information that is there so the licensee knows, so it's clear on as far as the steps that they need to take.
So so I did ask that we look into this because, as you mentioned, we've had requests, and just making sure that we're doing our due diligence, just thinking about making sure we check all the right boxes and that we are consistent in our application or decision making and that we treat people fairly. So I don't know. Beyond that, that was just my interest. What's the best way to do that? Is it through regulation? Is it just a policy statement that we post? Is it a guideline? I will defer to you and Carla to recommend the best way to do that. But then that way, when we get requests, we can provide feedback that says, this is what you need to do, this is a process you need to go through, and that we are being fair and equitable in our application of that consideration.
Thank you, Alan. So we've got this feedback from Virginia, and there may be one or two other jurisdictions we want to consult. But it seems to me that sort of establishing a board policy and getting the board to vote on it is the most appropriate sort of mechanism, I think, for getting after it. What is the best group to take on the development of a draft policy? Is it something we ask the board to do, or is it a subcommittee of the board, or is it this sort of very concrete project that an intern would really find a rewarding activity during their term at the Board of Pharmacy? And creating a draft, that is, for our review. Yes, Carla?
This is dealing with FDA, what is it? ADA accommodations, right? That's one where you're most likely going to predispose to say yes, unless there's a really good reason to say no. So if there's already information from other states, you just want some clear-cut objective criteria to look at quickly. Rarely are you going to say no, because there's just too many legal ramifications if you would deny that person inappropriately. I can't actually, unless the doctor's not real, the illness is not real, the document appears to be fake, you're probably going to get it. I think the only issue would be, and then even if you're going to second guess what they're asking, if the doctor has said they need time and a half, you'd be hard pressed to say, well, no, they only need time and a quarter. I mean, so I wouldn't put a whole lot of, like a whole subcommittee looking at this. I think if you have an intern who can pretty much consolidate the policies from the other states that you've looked at, and we can present that to the board at the next meeting, you can probably just have some general guidelines to look at.
Thank you for that guidance. Dr. White, how's that sound to you?
Sure, we can look at this and have something drafted on the December meeting. So.
Thank you. And as counsel has indicated, I think we can look at what others have done, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel here, and we're predisposed to approving such requests in any case. I don't think we've got to worry about it being too detailed, too precise. All right, with that, there's no other business. This is an opportunity for the public, if they have any comments or questions for the board, to please bring those forward. If you do, please use the microphone and just identify yourself and your institution,
before you make your comments or ask your questions. So, anything from the public today?
Good morning. My name is Tiffany Taylor. I'm with Walgreens. I'm a pharmacy resident at Ashley Site and Howard University. I just wanted to speak on the Narcan pilot program. Howard University is one of the sites, and we have the Narcan program in place. And we're getting a lot of good feedback. Generally, when we offer it, most patients are welcoming to the information, and a lot of them do want the Narcan. So it's definitely going well. Patients are receptive to the information that we provide them with. And in general, they do welcome the dispensing of the Narcan. They're appreciative. So.
Hi, Dr. Taylor. I have a quick question. On average, how many kits do you think you're dispensing a week, and has that number increased? I know we've been doing the program for maybe a little over a month.
So I actually took a look at the dispensing log this morning, and there was about eight listed, and that's just for October. I didn't get a chance to look at September, and we're in October 3rd. So they gave out quite a few this week. I haven't gotten a chance to look at September, but that's definitely something that I can look at for the next open meeting and let you guys know how exactly the numbers and how it's gone.
All right. Thank you for the feedback.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Questions? Right. Seeing none, then I'll ask if board members are prepared to make the appropriate motion to adjourn the open session. Now, this is a job I would typically take on, but I'm over here, so I can't. So I want you to put some gusto into this, all right? Who's prepared?
I'll do it. Mr. Chair, I move that the board close the open public session portion of the meeting and move into the closed executive session portion of the meeting pursuant to DC Official Code 2-575B for the following purposes: to discuss disciplinary matters pursuant to 2-575B9, to seek the advice of counsel to the board, to preserve the attorney-client privilege, or to approve settlement agreements pursuant to 2-575B4, and to plan, discuss, or hear reports concerning ongoing or planned investigations pursuant to 2-575B14.
Very nicely done. Is there a second for the motion?
A second.
Thank you both. Is there any conversation about that? Okay. Seeing none, if this requires a roll call vote, so if you would, please, I will start with the individual who made the motion. Dr. Miles, are you in favor of the motion?
Benjamin Miles, I'm in favor of the motion.
Alan Friedman, in favor of the motion.
Ashley Bowe, in favor of the motion.
James Appleby, in favor of the motion. All right, it carries unanimously. Congratulations. This concludes the public session of the meeting. The board will now move into the closed executive session portion of the meeting pursuant to DC Official Code S-2-575B for the reasons set forth in the motion. The open session meeting has adjourned at 10:49 a.m. This meeting is governed by the Open Meetings Act. Please address any questions or complaints arising under this meeting to the Office of Open Government at opengovoffice@dc.gov. Thank you all. See you in December.